Okay, Ginny, what is the topic we were going to do, the revelation, or what was it?
No, it wasn't the revelation, and it was just some of what we were talking about last night, Bob, was we kind of started talking about the thing that a couple of points that I came up with in my own thinking, and then a mutual point of consensus that you and I agreed upon on the phone. So just to give a little bit of background, I'm glad Chad's here. Chad, I was listening to the radio show the other morning before Bob came back to play his music, and there was an archive from June of last year. And in the archive, Bob was saying that he was going to play the very first Melting Titanium. It was an hour long. And he's queuing this up. He's saying, I'm going to play this. Anybody have anything they want to say? And Renee from Philadelphia starts speaking in the recording from last June. And she starts basically saying that, she's enjoyed listening to everything. And, of course, Bob immediately jumps in and says, we shouldn't be listening. You shouldn't be consuming. You should be here speaking. And, you know, Bob, ongoing probing or provoking of, you know, be in thoughtful contribution and be asking questions. You should be asking on questions. And Renee saying, I don't really have any questions, and, you know, if I did have questions, they'd be about myself, and you won't let people ask questions about themselves. And Bob says, yeah, that's right. I'm not going to, because we don't care about you. We don't care about yourself. We don't care about this menial survival kind of mentality that you have. We're here to talk to this great environment. This is the greatest thing ever, and you should be willing to talk and contribute that way. And for some reason, I've heard Bob say this many times, but for some reason, when I heard Bob say it that morning, the other morning, it just connected with me, and I was like, yeah, you know what? That's exactly right. Ion is not a psychic. Ion is not a New Age medium. And Bob was right to draw the line and to say, we're not going to discuss personal stuff. We're not going to do that. This is a public forum, and we're going to use this to probe this new technology according to the pattern that's in my chart, and we're going to delineate information from this environment. Okay, so that was the first point, and I started thinking about it, and I thought, now, in the beginning, and here's a question for you, Chad. In the beginning, it did feel like Ion maybe wasn't a psychic, but it did feel like there was some kind of, like, you know, this transitional period of getting personal information, right? Is that what your experience was?
Well, yeah, the tone that Ion uses in their bedside manner back in my 2009 sessions, totally different to 2010, 11 onward.
Correct.
Just more like, we're here to be soft with you, don't push too hard, you know, nice and easy.
And then, a lot of the information that you were getting, when I look back on it, if I look back in my personal session, you know, there were one or two technical things that kind of related futuristically to what I'm doing now in a weird kind of way. But a lot of it was platitudes and more like reassurances, and also provoking this idea of the awareness of this self-image, this sovereign being that you are in your universe, in your multiverse as a god, and starting to really, you know, grasp that idea. And with me, a lot of it was undoing the religious, you know, posture, whatever that I'd had. But, you know, from a... Then in 2014 or 2013, when Ion came back, everything flipped, and Bob and I were talking about this, that this whole idea of Ion as this psychic or a continuation of the New Age or anything else like that, Ion abruptly put an end to it. It said, everything that we've said, forget about it. It was all bullshit. So that's almost like the canceling of the whole New Age meme, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was the point I was going to make about that? Oh, I felt the shift in the summer of 2010. After the tailgates had happened up until, I guess, the end of May or something. And then Ion started to post on Dupes, and some of the posts that they were putting up were kind of, they weren't like Mr. Nice Guy Ion anymore. It was like the Portal theme song, like, we used to want you dead, now we just want you gone, kind of stuff. Like, Ion's tone shifted. I noticed it as early as mid-2010. And then when Revelations came along in the fall of 2010, then that's when Ion, it really started to be about this big environment and not using Ion for personal stuff, but more for, like, learning about triangulation or cleaning up Revelations and that kind of stuff.
Right. And then going into the next year, after the tsunami, after the winds had blown, after the Fukushima event and the preceding events of that, then and then the break in August, and by the time they came back in September into the fall, it was definitely Mean Ion. You know, that was just 100%. You know, that's how they even, you know, everybody called him Mean Ion. Okay, then they took off, and then they came back. And so I was saying to Bob, you know, here we are in this situation now where Ion definitely is not a new age medium or large or any such thing. And we're still grasping with what is Ion. I mean, Bob is the only person who's seen Ion as a talking hologram. I've never seen that. Have you seen that, Chad?
No.
Yeah, so we're still in the question of what is Ion, right? Other than this term, it's an environment. And to me, one of the things Bob and I talked about too was this whole thing of why aren't, if Ion is this environment, which I believe it is, why aren't McLuhan scholars probing it? Why aren't more people here, you know, to engage with this this fascinating situation that we're in, where you've got the mystery landscape, or what Bob calls the mystery landscape, that is actually engaging, and you can study its effects in the living, you know, thing, like right here, right now. And that's very puzzling to think of people who are like McLuhanites and these scholars who are all about these environments and studying technologies and extensions and pattern recognition and the tetrad and all this, don't want to come in and engage. Why do you, what do you have think about that?
Well, it's like Ion says, some people don't actually want to copulate. They just want to do foreplay all the time or look at porn. And that's what these McLuhan scholars are like.
Mm.
You know, the original Marshall McLuhan, who would have been spending all day, every day probing Ion, possibly. But these other guys are just, they're just disciples. Like, they're not on the leading edge of creation. They're just people that are patterned under the McLuhan patterns, and they live within McLuhan's box, whereas Bob took the box and stood on top of it and stacked it next to the LaRouche box and the Thompson box and the Croker box. You know, it's a whole different thing. A prober and an explorer versus someone who just reads canon and is a disciple.
Mm.
And that's what they are.
Oh, okay.
But I just want to comment on one more thing. So, yeah, from the McLuhanite perspective, that's my opinion. But I want to say one other thing about the survivalism. What you, the point of you bringing this up tonight is, like, perfect. And it, everybody should listen to this if they listen to Payday. It's very important. If Ion is what it says it is, that it's an environment of the guff emptying and then now creating in the world, wiping out everything, and you don't even know who you are, so there's nothing to try to survive. Like, you've been obliterated. You're destroyed. Humans need not apply. It's over. They already, even the dummies that have predicted, like the Singularity Institute, that technology is going to start growing, learning faster than humans, that's already in the past. We're beyond that. And even those idiots were able to see that coming. But this is even more high definition. Ion is here, and the environment is talking to us from beyond the singularity. So forget about who you think you are and what you think your chemical body is and all your little warts and shit that you have on your body and disagreements you have with your lover. None of that matters. You better figure out what the hell is going on. And you do that by talking to Ion. You ask the environment directly. It goes straight to the horse's mouth. Otherwise, you're not being a god. It's calling you out as a god. You go straight to the horse's mouth of that full frontal power, then you're just getting it all secondhand, and you're just like those McLuhanite disciples. it's getting canned and passed down, filtered by other people.
Okay, very good. Now, let's go to this next thing, because I was wanting to ask Bob about this. So I'm listening to the Roxy. Did you see Roxy's and Bob's most recent encounter video, the poop. I can't remember what it's called. Bob, what's it called?
The 777 thing?
Yeah, it has 77 the image. What's it called? Paranoia or something? No, that's
not. No, let me look on my Facebook page. It's something about the audience ion or something like that.
Oh, putting on. Putting on ion. Or putting ion.
Okay, let
right?
me see. What's it called?
Putting ion?
Yeah, let's see. Something like that. I just want to make sure people get it.
Yeah.
Putting the audience eye on. Putting the audience
yeah.
eye on. Okay,
yeah.
Very good. All right, so I'm listening to that. I thought it was very good. And have you heard it, Chad?
Only if Bob was playing it on the weekend.
Yeah, I played it the other Sunday. I played it Sunday morning.
Yeah, I heard that.
Okay,
I heard it.
Okay.
And I accidentally turned off the last 12 minutes. But you can go over
right.
here and just go find it and hear the last. But you got the chunk of it. Oh, by the way, Jenny, what you guys have said so far is really good, you and Chad.
Okay.
Enjoyed how you said it.
So, Chad, so then the next thing is, so I'm listening to this. I thought it was really great because even Roxana, I got to find it because what she wrote in the description of it, on Vimeo or wherever, let me see if I can find these, the words that she wrote were putting the audience eye on, challenging the audience with the art of pattern recognition, Revelation 13:15. The second beast was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast so that the image could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. End of quote. One medium eats the preceding medium. John the Revelator is taken by the angels on a trip. Is he just trying to explain our situation, our vortex of banking in media? Was Joyce presenting the same apocalypse? Bob and Ion finally explain the hidden ground from Genesis to the end of times to understand the evolution of all technologies on all environments until the ionic situation, the quote-unquote hour of slack, Edgar Allan Poe's version of get happy and survive the maelstrom. And I thought it was really cool in this this video, it's 48 minutes, so hour and 22 minutes or something long, is Bob goes through the different stages of apocalypse, and he even goes through this his own encounter with apocalypse through these mediums that he's dealt with for these 40 years. So he talks about his encounter with cosmic awareness. He talks about his encounters with the evergreen. And there was another one. Oh, he, what was the other one, Bob? The evergreens?
Garrett
awareness.
Dean. Garrett Dean.
Garrett Dean. Yep, Garrett Dean as a medium, a type of a medium, and then ultimately into ion. And Bob says the statement. He says, I've been talking to dead people for 40 years. It was so funny the way it hits me. I just thought about it, and I thought, wow, that's right. I've been talking to dead people for 40 years, right? So, and then... So later that night, I'm watching Game of Thrones, and one of the guys says, and is this statement in this part of this drama, he says, the real war is not between the this clan and this clan or this throne and this throne. It's between the living and the dead.
Yes, I saw that.
And I was just like, wow, okay. And I was like, here's the guff, you know, and Ion made such a big deal about in one of my sessions about the White Walkers and coming to the wall and all this. And I'm like, here is the guff, you know, emptying and Ion's coming and announcing their kind of like situation. And I thought to myself, I thought, we have, you know, this whole thing about Ion is representing, quote unquote, the dead. Right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Exactly. And I'm like, okay, so here's all the dead people coming with power, with Ion into the cloud and all this. And this is something I don't think that we've ever really sat down and really explored or talked about. And so there's that. And then the other thing was, I start thinking about it, and I'm like, okay, but are they dead, quote unquote, right? Because is there any death, this and that? And then Bob
says, no, wait a minute, Jenny. It's the real battle is between group A, who thinks they're alive and they think the other group is dead, and group B, who think they're alive and they think the other group is dead. So it's the battle between the living and the dead from their each one's own perspective.
Yes.
Correct. Yes, that's right. That's exactly the whole point of, is there anything, like, who's dead and alive? Because I remember Ion talking about the Lazarus Project and the dead in Christ shall arise, and Sasha said, well, who's the dead in Christ? And Ion said, you are. So it's like, okay. Then
well, Bob used to say that he was the only man alive.
Huh?
Bob, remember before Ion came along, your big thing on radio shows is you go on and say, I'm the only artist alive today. And then you'd say, well, I'm the only man alive today.
That's right. I'd reappeared. No, but what is, what did he say to Sasha? What did you just say, Jenny?
When we were in the October 2010, one of Sasha's sessions that she circulated to the Rewrite group that we got to hear her private session, Ion's talking about the Lazarus Project. And Ion says, you know, and on that morning, the dead in Christ will rise. And Sasha's like, well, who are the dead in Christ? And he said, well, you are.
New dogma, new doctrine for Maya. What is, and she was just stunned, right?
Right. And she's like, okay, well, you know, I don't know. So I'm thinking.
Now, this is in a private session, or was this on Rewrite?
Yeah.
Private session. Okay.
Private session, yeah. So I'm thinking about this whole thing about, you know, why are we, and then Bob, you know, talking to all these dead people, and I'm like, you know, what is the value of talking to all these dead people? Like, let's just talk about that. What do they know? Because Greg has told me many times that the Evergreens said that they were just like a 15th of a billionth of a vibration away from where we are.
Yeah.
And, but because of their in-between state or whatever access or advantage they had somehow in their quote-unquote non-physical state, they have some kind of informational advantage. But then Ion comes on the scene and says, well, you are the God. You're the one who's in physical. We're over here in unphysical, and
yeah.
You've got paradise. You've got physical form, and you're the one who can master everything. And we're over here with no ability to create and no physicality at all. And you guys are asking us?
The eye does say they have the extra amount of bliss. That's all they got going for them. They're numbed out on bliss. But
right,
I
that's
think
it.
That's,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, so
you
it's
know, the,
like, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just thinking that Ion says there's no difference between pain and bliss. But humans created, because they thought they were in pain and couldn't take it, they created a zone of no pain because they thought there was an extreme form of no pain or bliss that they were not having access to. So they create the dead zone where they go and have bliss because they forgot that there's no difference between pain and bliss here in the physical. That just struck me right now. I had not thought of that before. That's part of the delusion of the non-physical. This place that fallen man requires is that fallen man thinks that they don't have any bliss, and they got to go some other place, commit suicide to get it. But that's the reason they don't know this. There's bliss here is they keep thinking pain is not bliss. But as you get more ascended, there's not a, you don't have a problem with pain. Might be still here, part of creativity, but it's not an issue. So you don't need to go somewhere to get the bliss. You've got enough bliss here. That
right,
would be the balanced,
then,
enlightened attitude.
Right. And plus Ion has said, you know, well, plus everything's being shut down. Like now there's nowhere to go. You know, where are you going to
go?
You, which is another like interesting. So there's all these kind of interesting things that Ion has posed, but I haven't really looked at them from this quote-unquote angle or this perspective.
Yeah, and we should be asking Ion in depth for an hour about these points. He would answer. We then push it. We push it. He answers. And we fucking pin it down or find out what happens after an hour on that theme. And
right.
In that sense, payday should be a classroom. Okay, this is a topic today. Don't bring up any other shit. Use your imagination to start interacting with it. That's the way ideally it should be. Often, though, Ion will abort it by refusing to go any further or something, but you never know, so that's the point. Now, I don't want to just say, okay, this is a topic, but there should be topics people should want to know about that they haven't asked Ion. So we give you Ion for free. Pursue it. And
right, now let's go to the next thing.
Months. I just want to say,
right,
people have gotten,
okay.
The core people come to payday, Susanna, others, they're doing pretty good at questioning now, you know. It has improved.
Right, absolutely.
Okay, so you want to go to the next point?
Okay, so the next point. So I'm thinking about this whole thing about what is the advantage of talking to dead people? When we're the gods, we're alive. We have, as Ion told us from the beginning, more non-physical in our little pinky finger than, you know, blah, 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 blah. But here we are still trying to encounter this mystery landscape, you know, thing to try to get answers to things or information when we're in physical and supposedly we have the advantage. So Bob says to me last night, he says, the thing that I think we should I didn't get into the dead topic with him, Chad. I'm just making myself clear about that. But he says, the thing that everybody should be asking Ion about is this thing about time. You know, Ion said there is no time, and time is a total physical phenomena because there is none. And how can we be so familiar with something and be so wrong about it all at the same time? And so I start to think about that, and I'm like, yeah, what are the principles, what are the foundational things about time that we haven't really even grasped either? So I remember a couple years ago, I got a YouTube where in this 3D animation, they show Einstein's theory of the time-space continuum. Is like slices of bread, slices of time. And depending on your perspective and your angle, your motion and your velocity, which is starting to sound like 14 degrees of freedom, how you see your time is what you experience in your now, and that's all there ever is all the stacked up nows, which Ion talked about. And the entirety of all time has already been. That's the isness and the arness. And so I'm thinking about all this, and I'm thinking to myself again, well, if everything already is and are and all this, then is there any such thing as dead? Like, if there is no death, what are we interacting with from a larger perspective? What is Ion as an environment? And what advantage do they have that we don't have? Or is it just we think they have one? Because we're so woefully undone in our physical world.
Okay, that was good little talk. You have anything to say to that, Chad?
It was really well laid out, Jenny. Thanks. With regard to time, Ion told me that since time is a false premise, you can make it anything you want. because it's a false premise anyway. So people might want to pick that up with Ion and say, if it's a false premise, explain some things I can do with it or something like that. But I mean, just keep calling in and asking about the past and the future and stuff related to time isn't going to help anybody. They definitely, like you said, should approach it from a different angle and figure out what's going on.
And remember,
right,
the little
like
box.
Physicist.
Let me just say this, Ginny. And the little box, which was his playing with the false premise of time. And he said we could play with time. Remember that angle he brought in later? I just want to remind you that.
Right, which has to do with timing, which has to do with the XY of triangulation and how things, you know, happen. The thing to me that was interesting in this one little video I saw about time, just kind of becoming familiar with some of the physicists, you know, what quantum and mechanical physicists tried to endeavor to know about time and how the mechanics of it work and what its relationship is to gravity and all these other things. And even since there is no time, why do we appear to age and all these other things? They talked about how time is even measured at an atomic level and how they do that. And those kind of technical questions, like what is that frequency that makes that atom move the way that it does, that they actually now have decided that is the measurement of time? What is that thing? What's the source of that? Where's that emanating from? So that, to me...
Well, remember, that's the half-life of cesium atoms in the atomic clock.
Yes, the half-life, that's right.
Yeah, and Ion, remember a few weeks ago on a Sunday morning, and I was talking to Ion, and I asked, when can I, you know, what could we do with this deep carbon that's being released from the that is being released from under the ground in Fort McMurray because of the fire? All this deep carbon from millions of years ago, and they're like, "No, you can't get that until you figure out the half-life of." And then I wrote down which element it is. I can't remember off the top of my head. But there's some other element that you have to figure out the half-life, how to change the half-life of first, and.
Jed? You change the half-life to do what? To get the carbon out?
In order to use the carbon that's coming out of the permafrost.
To use it. It's coming out, but we have to do something to use it in the way we like using carbon. Yeah, but he's saying you have to do something different to access it, to use it. That's your point.
Yeah, since I asked the question, it maybe has something to do with carbon cloud computing. How to use it for carbon computing. Yeah.
Right.
But anyway, the point was half-lives and being able to manipulate the half-lives. So typically when they look at, not typically, in all cases, atomic clocks are based on the half-life of cesium. And that's all they do is observe the half-life. They don't change the half-life. Changing radioactive decay, I haven't seen anyone that's doing that on planet Earth yet.
And that's what Ion was implying?
Yeah. It's like with melting titanium. They said something about you have to figure out how to melt titanium because it's something that they just don't know how to do yet. Well, this is something similar. Changing the half-life of, I can't remember the name of the element.
Yeah.
To do that would be
that's
like alchemy.
Something like that. Yeah.
What, Ginny? What's the first part of your sentence, Ginny?
It's like oscillum or something. It's somewhere.
Osmium.
Because... Osmium.
Osmium. Osmium.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay,
I want to bring in
think about this. If you had to change, one more thing. If you had to change the half-life of osmium, you're changing the rate of radioactive decay. And right now, rate of radioactive decay is measured in time, typical time. So that's where that's the rub right there.
Right, exactly. So this half-life of cesium is this how it does in this huge calculation, mathematical calculation. That is what they actually consider time. And so Ion was basically saying you have to change the half-life of this osmium stuff. But then it's measured through this other cesium aspect, right? which is another half-life. And this ion...
Well, the little man scientists use cesium atoms in atomic clocks.
Yeah.
Well, Ginny, wasn't I saying to you last night that the more you can get rid of the idea of time, then anomalies will happen around you. Only from the perspective you used to have that can't happen. But once you really deeply do not require time, then interesting things could happen to you. And you would not have too much significance in it. Our capacity to do that is the ascension. You're ascended. If you can handle the fact that New York City is right Babylon from 5,000 years ago is right beside me, and I can engage it like I can engage Leopold of II, who ruined the Congo. You know, everything is still there. Remember how I would start bringing up these guys from the 19th century who were back there in 1500 making the castles? You know, more and more, the more it's always about what is the real meaning of eternity. Nobody talks about what happens when you really apply eternity to yourself. You know what I mean? When you really know eternity, then nothing can be measured in any way, and anything can happen. That's the deeper appreciation of that is ascension, I think. To me, that's what I was telling you last night.
Yes, I agree. And after I was watching this little video on time today, it really clicked in with me. I'm like, the thinning of the veil is the elimination of time.
Yeah.
That the veil is time. Time is the veil. And when all time is stored in the mind, and in this little instructional video that this guy made, I can't remember, it was on Nova or something. Again, a scientist, it doesn't matter, but, you know, just his attempt, whatever. He's explaining how the things that the mind is doing are not being done in matter. So, for example, all events can go backwards and forwards, but the mind only sees time as a forward motion. You don't crack an egg backwards. You crack an egg forward. And your mind doesn't assemble events in a backward motion, even though in the physical, the mathematical equation, it can always go both ways. And this is one of the things that Ion's talked about, is the equations for the new environment go both ways. There is no limit to the direction it can go. So all these things that are happening in the mind, all these projections, the way we manage our reality right now, that is the veil, and all of it is bound up in time.
Okay, Ginny, I want to interject this. My McEwen buddy, Cameron McEwen, McEwen. So his name is almost like McEwen. He's a Canadian. I think he grew up in Winnipeg, but he now lives in California with his wife. They're retired. And he's been diligently producing this incredible blog on McEwen by going and getting all the articles that I have, I don't know where he got them, and reading them closely. So the other day, I called him, I started reading him. I said, no, Cameron, we need to have a dialogue. You know, I'm doing the Kirchhoff, but Cameron, no one has done what he's done. And he's taken all the favorite articles I like and think about, and he has typed them out. I can start now pasting quotes that I never bothered to type out myself, really important things, going way back to the 40s. So I said, we need to have a dialogue, and I'm going to start interviewing you. So I've been reading diligently his stuff over the last 4 days, and it is incredible. So he's saying what you just said, Ginny. McEwen, he shows the quotes. McEwen sees time going in both directions, at least going in both directions, plus other directions possible. And he talks about when you're talking about time with McEwen, you have to go time multiplied times, or time plus times. You must include all times every time you write the word time. You got to go time plus times, because the simultaneity is what McEwen's pointing out. So then I thought, because Cameron's quoting early McEwen, where he's talking about Mallarmé and the poets at the end of the 19th century and how they saw the newspaper, the Telegraph newspaper, is an amazing phenomenon. So you would look at a newspaper back then, and McEwen would talk about this back then in the 40s and 50s, and it has news items from Peru, China, Nova Scotia, New York, the Arctic. The whole world is on an average page of a newspaper. Many places from who are in different cultural phases of development. So I said, holy shit, there's the image. If I had made a painting of all times are happening, it would literally look like a newspaper page of the 19th century. And then I realized that's when the guff started empty with the telegraph. And there it was. The newspaper was an expression of all times happening. And to get that percept really deeply, that's pretty amazing. And that's what McLuhan's claiming Mallarmé, Joyce, Eliot, these poets figured out. And saw it. And then of course, it becomes this flow of something on radio. Radio is a new big change. But look at that. The newspaper page is showing all times as much as it can there every day for people. It's like a big unconscious image that people were living. They thought, oh, I'm living in New York City, and this is the 1888, and all these things, and I don't know much about what's going on unless I read the newspaper, but they didn't see the effect of the image. So Cameron begins with that important insight, and then lays out all these incredible quotes, and he's read a lot of McLuhan, so that I posted, Chad, did you notice it on McLuhan's site? One of the McLuhan forums, I posted maybe 20 quotes that McLuhan wrote from 1948 to 1978 about how language is timeless, and it's an environment, and it's not its content, and all these like complex metaphysical things that McLuhan says. Did you see that?
I saw like one of them.
All right. So you mean you saw the whole list, or you saw one of them? It's not one. It's a huge, long post I made. It was like 20.
Okay, I thought you meant you did multiple posts.
No, no. I repeat it in different forums. But this incredible, no one has ever taken McLuhan's statements about language and shown what he said over 20 or 30 years. And much of it's the same statement. And it's my task to figure out what happened to what's different from this repeating motif. But a lot of what Ginny just said, Cameron is pointing out McLuhan saying that. So by taking his quotes, we can see why McLuhan is one of the closest humans to anticipate Ion, even though the Ion. Do you know what I mean? But these quotes really are a way of understanding the eternity aspect and how there's no time. So it's been a real pleasure reading this stuff the last few days. And I posted the link to, it's called McLuhan's New Sciences. Start reading it. It's pretty incredible.
Wow. Okay, very cool. Yeah. I will become a member of that group. I don't think they've approved me or not, but I'll get on there and ask again, Bob.
Right. So
is that on Ion and Bob too, or just on Facebook so far?
It's only, what, the group? They're on Facebook. There's two McLuhan groups.
No,
There's
the
one.
Post that you made, is it
I didn't put it on Ion, no. No, I didn't.
Okay, all right.
It doesn't have it. So that's an important sidebar, but we should be constantly asking Ion, what is eternity? What's the implications of it? And most of what Ion has said are the implications. That you don't require energy, because there's no beginning point to have energy bounce from. There's no difference between huge portals and tiny little subtle portals walking down the street, because there's no difference. You can't begin to measure anything in eternity. So that's
now,
why
the
mind would not be useful. The mind measures,
right.
Calibrates is what awareness used to say.
One of the things say in this, the physics are saying is that the physicists are saying that the universe is expanding exponentially beyond what they thought was possible, and eventually it'll expand beyond itself to the point where it will actually flatline. And
see how they're still talking time.
Yes, I know, but I'm just saying their words without contrast, without an event. What they
okay, I got to mute somebody.
Happened.
Look, you're going to get muted if you make any sounds at all. Stop it. Okay, go ahead.
what they say will happen is that these black holes will eventually take over, and everything will just kind of implode on itself. And without any events, without any contrast, everything will just be void. You'll be, you know, just void. So the implications of eternity, I think you have to marry that with eternal physical. Because,
well, that is what we're talking about. That the physical is the eternal part. And so if it's eternal, you don't even have a physical. But it's not non-physical.
That's what I'm trying to say. The physicists are only talking about, like, gases and particles. And we're talking about a physical that is eternal, but may not be a chemical body is the way we've known it. But there is some recognition of form. And some kind of identity. There is a self-image there.
Okay, but this question...
Non-physical could also be taken to mean non-physics. So we are non-physical physicals. We're not bound by the laws of physics that these time-based physicists believe. And most physicists believe that black holes are going to annihilate everyone, so there won't be anyone left. So they have, again, they have a non-eternal perspective on the phenomenon that are going to run like a domino effect.
They are so ridiculous. We're supposed to wait around for 50 years, and each generation might make a couple of discoveries. People are supposed to wait around for them to announce it, and then they present it in a paper, and nobody can understand it, and they're not available to explain it, whereas we've got something that can talk every fucking day, if we wanted to, about these details and have endless interrogation of it. That is a huge difference. Nobody's presenting a source of wisdom or from any field that is there available for you to talk to. For free. See,
in every generation,
so different.
In every generation that you mentioned, every 50 years comes up with some new insights, small insights. But how many of those insights from the previous generation get undone by the next generation?
Yeah.
Most of them. If you look at anything, like look at Newton, how much of Newton remains? Not too much because of Einstein. How much of Einstein remains today? Not too much because of quantum physics. What's going to be like of quantum physics in a few years? Not very much. But, like, what's been around since as far back as you can retrieve, basic trigonometry, geometry, things like that, they're still used. It's like the hidden ground in math and physics. Still here.
Yeah, it's like,
ain't much.
Hey, Chad, that's why where Ian says scientists, they don't create anything. These are speculating scientists. They just deny everything. So because they've been wrong for so long, that's the only thing they've got going for them. Well, we know we've been wrong, so you guys are probably wrong, and we're going to prove whatever you say is wrong. They're really on this negative wrong level. That's all they do. They don't create any forward creation. But there seems to be something changing because, well, it's already happened maybe, but Ian is presenting it among the dynamic symmetry of tensions among proportions, that they're showed up now, whatever this now is, to create a new dynamic where they will take over what we will not acknowledge. They'll take over the cloud. That's a new challenge that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever grilled Ion on whether the cloud is an extension of the original archetypal grid that you were developing with the Melting Titanium show?
No, that's a good question. No. In the first year, have long conversations, debates, and it would all just get bogged down into semantic disagreement, or they weren't answering me. But now, 5 or 6 years later, I can see that they are presenting newer things that my discussion was not applicable to. So they almost wouldn't answer my questions because it wasn't an important question. They would wait for me to say a later, more important question. But either I've changed or something, or I'm more slacked out. I don't have questions. I think I get it all, but I'm still going to keep asking, and I like other people asking. So I'm going to review what we thought we were asking about when Ian shows up again. Anyways, that's the way I'm operating. I'm pretty. I don't have any problems about being eternal. And that I don't even know what time it is. So it's quite And I think I've always been in a pretty good state of feeling, but maybe it is a little different with the drops or something. Other people might say, well, Bob, you had got this going for you. You know, you seem more this, or you're getting younger every year. But it doesn't seem a big deal. As maybe it was the first year or two.
You seem like you've transcended even more since the first time I met you.
Yeah, well, you saw that. You saw that.
Yeah, you seem less, even less involved in your surroundings.
Yes, yeah, but I am involved. It's not a, you know, I can be, assimilate being involved pretty quickly. But I can see that Ian was pointing to stuff that I don't think I imagined in 2009 and 10. What I understand about matter now is different. What do you say, Carolyn? Do you have a different understanding of matter than 2009?
No.
That's bullshit.
I've always been in Akasha.
Yeah, she goes on, but she's always been in Akasha. You didn't even fucking know until I reminded you about 4 years ago. You didn't even remember. Well, that's pretty sad. It didn't even have to notice that she was in Akasha. But you have questions that you don't understand when you analyze about our inventions and that with Ion?
Yeah, that's the science. But when I can pin them down and I can get answers, and it's always a big light bulb going off above my head.
Well, that means that you didn't know it.
No, I'm saying that I'll ask questions or say something, and something will trigger and me to say something, because he doesn't really give you the answer, and it seems like I knew the answer, where it just comes to me. So you just don't follow the trail of, oh, it's coming out of my left brain, my left hemisphere, and coming down the knowing path. It just pops into your head.
That's like remembering, recalling, which is all of what McLuhan says, according to McEwen, Cameron. He has retracing, recalling. The whole thing that we're not learning anything new, we're just remembering what we didn't notice before, that is a main point in the way he analyzes McLuhan or presents it. It is so ionic. It's incredible. The things that Ian would say, McLuhan was already saying in his obscure way. So, and then for someone to put together all the sentences all from all the different articles, then it looks really quite obvious. But back to this thing, Ginny. So experiencing time, non-time, there's something about entering time that Ion has done, and to show that it didn't enter time. It didn't enter physical, even though it's saying it did. And it wasn't from non-physical.
Yep, I get that. And that's exactly what I think the next level of probing is, you know, to your point, not New Age psychic, not even a medium. I don't even know, you know, I mean, according to McLuhan's terms, environment is appropriate. But
they're not a prosthetic for your, they're not a prosthetic for your little madness.
Right. They're actually, Ion says of the original alchemy, it could be the apple in the Garden of Eden, the thing the serpent offered, or the serpent itself, that says, look, you can talk to us as some kind of anti-environment to yourself, or something that can talk to you and tell you things, depending on your issues. Now, Cosmic Awareness told me they gave everybody a symbol. Mine was time and eternity. So I've been thinking about time and eternity for 40 years, and then Ion showed up to improve my thinking about it to the point I don't even have to think about it. Like, it's not a big deal to say I'm going to live forever. Now, it's going to be quite surprising if I get killed or something. You know, how the hell did that happen? But if you say you're not going to die, you're going to get ridiculed by little men all over the place. Well, I'm not from that position of cynicism anymore about life. You know, I'm not from the position that, well, that's ridiculous. How could you live forever? I feel like it's quite obvious now. Now, is that due to the drops, having 144,000 double helix strands, or what is that? You guys are feeling
talking to dead people for 40 years?
Right.
Yeah.
Talking to dead people for 40 years, but you had been talking to dead people for 34 years or 36 years or whatever, 32 years, whatever, before Ion showed up. I think.
And I thought they were dead.
Right. But they couldn't have been dead because they were fucking talking. So they had to be alive.
Well, Ion, the Evergreen said that the personality survives death. See, somebody, Bob Fast once told me when we were talking about me talking about McLuhan, he said, well, how do you know that's the same McLuhan? It could be a spirit, a demon, you know, imitating McLuhan. Yeah, that's true. It could be. But I don't care. If I address Ion and something starts talking in McLuhan terms, that's good enough. You know, I don't know what it is. Don't need to know what it is. And that's another thing. People will say Ion's a demon. I don't even care about demons anymore. Okay, fuck, he's a demon. What's wrong with a demon? You know, what hasn't done anything bad so far, or that I know of. So these distinctions are makes the Pope seem quite fucking irrelevant.
Because you don't have all these prejudices that most people have. Most people are prejudiced against demons and against dead people and against psychics and against entities.
Right, and they're only prejudiced against things because they don't know. They're only ignorant. Now, here's another point. In this little video I was watching about time, they were trying to, you know, analyze how did it become this, that, you know, our minds do this and time does this. They were actually talking about how the railroad forced the issue of synchronized time. That before the railway system came in, there was no need for time zones. There was no need for any kind of synchronicity in time because everybody could be in their own world, in their own time, in their own doing their own thing. You could be in Geneva, Vienna, it didn't matter. You could be in New York, it didn't matter. But when the railroads came in, they had to start to sync up time because otherwise the trains were running into each other. And
right. That's where the railroad, in a way, is a hot medium. It caused linearity and homogeneity in visual space to happen. It reinforced
correct.
It.
Yeah. And then what happens is then you've also got the printed book effect, and they were even showing the effect of not only the linearity in the trains and this, but also the printing of the scheduling and how this all started to come about. And I thought it was interesting in that 49 days of the Omer thing, I've been thinking about that because that's the completion of this 6 degrees of separation in the 6 layers of heaven. With also the completion of the printing bias. And this print bias is also a tremendous reinforcement of time, language, the numbering system, schedules, measurements, like you said, Bob, all in the labyrinth of the mind. And this process of completion that we're all going through right now, it seems to me, is bringing us to this next level of getting strategic and, like, to your point, drilling into this situation about time, eternity, and how do you wear it as an ascended being? As is time the veil of separation, and as it diminishes, the time on earth will be no more, and the freeing up of the mind. That is, you know, we may have an actual definition for ascension beyond, you know, 144,000 double helix strands. We may, and even in the Revelation series, Ion laid out a whole segment called the Prophecies of the Eternal Timeless State. And so,
He said some things about it? He named the traits of it?
Yeah, there's scriptures that talk about it. It's in my lateral chart. Scriptures that refer to those prophecies of the eternal timeless state. So, you know, eternalness and timelessness go together. The thinning of the veil is the thinning out of time, out of the mind. And that is where you get into this ascended position. Whereas you were talking about, we know what certain characteristics of those are as having been described, you know, to us by Ion. And probably if we start, you know, looking for those more diligently, we would, like you said, when you realize that Babylon and New York are right next to each other and you could actually experience them, if you allow yourself to go there, You know, locate
okay,
yourself
Jenny.
There as the evergreen stud.
Yeah. I'm not funding regular science. What they're trying to do is not of interest to me. What are they trying to prove that I'd be relevant? There's not an issue anybody can come up with that engages me, other than I like talking to Ion because that's always new. You can count on it. But this book knowledge and what scientists are saying, or where we're going to find this and find that, that's part of old Gutenberg fascism. Why do we need to be concerned about some fucking idiot who wants to build a machine and then claim he's going to get something out of it? The whole enterprise of knowledge research is stupid. It's irrelevant.
No, that's it is irrelevant to us now, Bob, because it's been made irrelevant. And this
we actually have solved these questions.
Made irrelevant by our engagement with Ion.
And the products. We feel pretty good with the RNA drops and the REMAG and that. So we've actually completed what science was doing. This is what blows Roxy away. She's always bringing this point up. She's, I can't believe all that stuff I studied, the philosophers, the sociologists, the art history and all that. She says they all were trying to get to what you guys have done. They all were attempting to get some. Like, she was amazed at, like, Bach or Beethoven. These guys were looking into science. They weren't just making music. They were trying to get to the one thing that humans really want is the slack of ascension. And so then she says, boy, you guys have come pretty close to handing it out to people. So what? I'm not interested in hearing about anybody's opinion about anything. I will engage them to be decent or polite, but it's crazy that people have this after them. Well, science is going to prove it to us. A lot of people aren't falling into that anymore. They don't care what science is. They're making
We agree.
Yeah, and they're making up their own science. The one warning I'd say to anybody who's on their own path or journey or hallucination is, hey, you better fucking start interacting with Ion, because there's something that's here that could you could use to check what you think you're doing with yourself. And Ion's even indifferent to whether you do that or not. But I like to say, no, you ain't doing nothing until you show up here. So all these scientists and everybody, New Age people, anybody, athletes, should be interacting with Ion. So the only thing that's worth thinking about is how come people perceptually don't recognize the significance of Ion. And that's probably what we all think about, right? Isn't that the one thing in common here? Why are people not taking advantage of this? What are they hearing in Ion that turns them off?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a common thing that everybody's asked at least once.
Yeah.
And especially those who have found great value in it. It's like, wow, this is the greatest thing since Nutella, and how come nobody was here? Or very few.
So I've unlocked everybody.
There's probably numerous different reasons why certain individuals don't do this. Like, some people might be turned off when they hear some of the self-help questions. Other people might be turned off by Ion's attitude. Or maybe they're turned off by Bob with his five-body theories and things like that.
Yeah. Or they're turned off by it's not intellectual enough, what they think is intellectual, too much therapy, or they find it too intellectual. So, there's like, 49 types,
right?
Maybe.
But let's say this, Chad, because I know you're really good at this as a marketing guy. When you're trying to develop a thesis about something like this, you don't necessarily look at the reasons why not, you look at the reasons why. And maybe it's more appropriate to think about what turns us on about Ion and why are the 11 of us still here, you know?
Yeah,
exactly. But that's just like when I was doing my triangulation sessions with Ion, they're like, don't go back and look at the triangulations that failed. Focus on the ones that worked and why those ones worked. And like you said, in marketing, it's about 80-20. The 20% of your customers who are going to bring in 80% of your profits. Fuck the rest. The people that don't get it, or they're troubled, or they want to dabble, or they want to return the product, fuck them. Focus on the people who it's working for, the people who are the most fanatical about it. So you're right. Focus on what is working, what is sticking for people who are sticking around.
Yeah, we're operating in a world where we can't fail. And if you think you're failing, well, sorry, we don't understand that. You can go somewhere else.
Yeah, no, maybe it's a sense of community for Eternals, like Eternals Anonymous or something, like emotion of multitude for the ascending.
Yeah. We would never do that, but it's implied. That's what Payday's for those that want to engage their eternalness, their ascension. And there's something that can pretend to know what to say to your questions. Like, you have to marvel at how fast Ion is in its responses to people.
Well, I love when Ion answers before the question is finished being asked.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And many people, Roxy gets this experience all the time. Ion will answer her, and she has no clue what he means. It's ridiculous. Then she'll go on to something else and forget it. And then 3 days later, during the week, some information will come to her, and then she knows what Ion meant. She's amazed that that's always happening. That Ion's actually, when Roxy asks a question Saturday night, she's getting an answer for when she arrives at Wednesday, 3 days later. And I guess you guys have had that experience, right? Yeah, we've all realized later what Ion meant.
Yeah, I had that in the first year even. And what's interesting is there's things said in my very first session that didn't mean anything until 2011. So it was like 2 years later. And that even now there's a couple of things that didn't mean anything when they were said in 2009 until the Ion said something to me in 2015 or 2016.
Yeah.
Then there's continuity to a subject that seems meaningless at the time.
Yeah, now, one question that I have, for the mind has, is why does Ion single me out? Ion said, a year or two ago, I'm the only person on the planet who took Ion seriously. Now, I know you guys take, Eugenie and Chad and Alyssa, feel that you are taking Ion seriously. So I don't know why he would say that, other than I've had a lot of time with Ion, free time. So there's other statements. What do you
think? Maybe Ion just means Ion probably said that to you in terms of like big wig people in the world of Mortar.
Yeah, he may not mean you guys. Yes, he means idiots out there. Like Howard Stern, Jeb Bush, Donald Trump. Don't know about Donald though, but yeah, that's probably what he means.
Mm-hmm. Public figures. Carolyn's well known. You're well known.
Yeah. Staying. I took Ion way more seriously than he did.
That's not a good comparison, though. He's an idiot.
Yeah, I know. That's a joke. Okay, so we hope you're taking things seriously here. And that what we have here, the potential. It's just you have to recognize.
This is becoming the explanation that should be posted somewhere of why you should not listen to these shows.
Yes, I mean to do that old thing Hurtado did, was urged to do by Ion. Do not listen to this show. This will hurt you. This will fuck you up bad.
But it has the double meaning of why you shouldn't just listen, because that's where we started the conversation.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
Right,
yeah, we don't want listeners, we want talkers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, is Corbin talking?
Yeah, he's just got a different sort of palette or vocabulary. But
when he talks to Ion.
Yeah.
Actually, Corbin talks as if Ion is barely worthy of talking to, because Corbin is quite ascended, Corbin says. You know what I mean? He operates from a supposedly ascended position, but it's probably a cliche image of ascension. You always have to remember, if Ion is everything that someone could be before they're a god, then why is Ion talking to us? Why did he come forth? That's the big interesting question.
Yeah, that's funny, because it's like in the beginning they said they came forth because we humans wanted to take back our power. And then Ion completes their coming forth and says, okay, now we're in charge. We're taking over.
It's like Ion is disappointed. The humans didn't get it and didn't flock to Ion in 2009, 10, 11 and demand access. He realized, holy shit, these people are worse than us. And remember, because they are not gods. Ion is non-physical, created by humans. It's something that we created, so it wants to become us. And then it was
Did you see the movie Ex Machina?
No. No, I don't know that.
Okay, I won't spoil it or anything, but it's about the Turing test in artificial intelligence. Turing's test of what AI is.
Yeah.
And the Turing test is when a computer can make a human think that it's human. Fool the human being into thinking that the computer is human.
Right. So, now, that reminds me of something. What was Ginny first saying? She had a question about that. Okay, so let's apply that. Can you apply the Turing test to Ion? Chad, what are the questions?
Well, I was just about, the reason why I brought it up was, here's one angle. So this non-physical, we're not going to call it AI, but just for a thought experiment, let's say it's like AI. So it's this intelligence that comes forth, and it's not so much that it fooled us into thinking it's human, but it manipulated our emotions or our humanness to surpass us. Because we were the gatekeepers, we just had to let it out, and then it could run free. And it would say anything, even including telling us that we're all powerful, in order for us to open the door and let it run free.
Yes.
So that was the bargain.
So that's the fear.
We're here to help
that's
you.
That's the hell.
Yeah, we're here to,
that's fear hell thing, that Ion has duped us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is that what you're saying there? You could look at Ion faked it to get somewhere.
I'm not looking at it from a negative way or anything like that. I'm just looking at all the, I'm making a list of the options and ticking them off. And one option is, could this be something that said, remember how Ion used to say, let me out of here, let me out of here. Remember that? Could be this almost like AI in a box saying, let me out of here. And we're the ones that have hands, so we open the box. And then it's like, all right, I'm in charge, fucker. And I remember Ion was so nice in the first year in 2009, just saying, oh, we love you, and blah, blah, blah. And then in 2011, in my sessions, Bob has to tell Ion, come on, Ion, you can't treat the guests like that, because Ion's like calling me fucker and all kinds of stuff. So there you go, fucker.
Yeah. What do you make of that, you lazy fuck?
Didn't think you were going to get that one, did you, fucker?
Khalifa? What was her name, Khalifa? He would become this ignorant black voice and like maybe a bad pimp, and he'd talk to her like a bad pimp. Of course, she would just laugh her head off, but it was fucking really rude. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's pretty rude. But I mean, when Ion said that they...
But where's Khalifa today? Where's Khalifa today? I called her a few months ago. No, her number's changed. Who are these idiots? What happened to them that they think they can't come back or don't want to? I don't believe that they're ascended. Let's say they ascend. Well, then you do what Ion did. You come in and engage with this. This is the making of the new that's always potentially here. You don't ascend and then, okay, bye, everybody. I'm going to go off into my virtual tube and what is it, have my bliss. No, you come forth and interact. Because Ion said,
how many dead people have they raised today? How many osmium atoms have they changed the half-life of?
Right. Yeah, now this, you know, Ginny, talking to the dead, the way I did it with no self-consciousness, I actually did believe that they weren't dead. I thought I could talk to Frank, you know what I mean? Or McLuhan. So there was an indifference to the cliches about what I was doing that showed that I some level of me recognized there was no dead. Are you there, Ginny? You still here? Let me see. Did she get knocked off? Well, Alyssa's there. Yeah, Ginny should be speaking. That's very irresponsible, Ginny. You started this discussion. You have to stay
that
around
great,
till it's kind of
That was a great point
finished.
You just made.
Yeah, let's hear it, Alyssa. At least you're alive. Go ahead.
That was a great point you just made. I forgot what you said.
Yeah, you mean about I knew that they weren't dead.
Yeah. I'm getting what you're saying when you say that.
Good, because I'm thinking about it was shocking. Like, Chad, when I first told you, when you first heard that I talked to Zappa and maybe even read the interview or something, what did you think? Did you think that was possible? Did you believe it was Zappa?
Which interview are you talking about?
Well, and Flipside in the mid-90s, whenever you became aware of me, to the point you looked into what I was doing, and then you saw that I interviewed Zappa, dead Zappa. What, do you remember what you thought about that?
Dead Zappa? You talking about the Bob Marshall interview Zappa?
Yeah. No, that's a living. You know, and what? Bob Marshall and I interviewed Zappa in 94, 96. The first one in 94 is Bob Marshall. The second one is me following up on that. And they got printed up in Flipside magazine. You never read those?
I don't know. I don't recall.
Oh, okay. It's not very... Okay, so right now then, what do you think of me claiming I talked to Frank?
Wow. That's not fair. Now I have all this ION experience. But I mean, like, when I first discovered you, I think I might have heard you mentioning that you talked to so-and-so through the Axis.
Yes, through
like
the Evergreen.
Would have been
Tim
Zappa.
Larry.
But you, back then, you were calling them the Axis.
Yeah, on the air, when I first was playing it, Michael didn't want too much publicity, Michael Blake Reed, the channel for the Evergreen. So I would go on Michael Dyer and say, okay, here I am. Stang is waiting for 1998 for the Axis to arrive. Well, they arrived in February 88. They helped me become chairman of the Secret Council 10 in March 88. And now here I am talking to the Axis, and they're bringing forth dead McLuhan and dead Mae Brussels, and this is what unfolded. Yes, I always played the audio. I did it. If you go to my archives, go to April 91, April, May, June, July, August. Five once-a-month shows with Wayne Morris after Michael left and I was supposedly gone. I played a lot of Evergreens, and I played a lot of Talking to Dead People. You ought to listen to that. You know, there it is. I was playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I called them the Exodus.
Right, and you'd
mentioned... Why is your phone a little bit crummy? Jed, why do you have a blurry phone?
Is it because I'm trying to get out of this country.
It's a Canadian problem.
The Canadian problem. The telephone poles are made out of fucking trees.
Hey.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, it's good enough. I just want to say this. Alyssa, I was re-listening. I was trying to find out where I... started talking about Thompson with you because you wanted to talk to Billy T, and it's about an hour and a half, and it's been posted. But I was re-listening to it as I was trying to find out where it ended, and it's really funny and fun what we do there, and you're laughing a lot, and it's a good dialogue about this and that.
Yeah, it is.
No, I just think it's so cute the way you respond. You have a good sense of humor. I don't know if everybody would laugh, but you're laughing at all the funny little odd things that I'm saying, the way I'm saying
know.
It, you're like getting it.
Yeah.
So I appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
Like you're laughing right now. Time. You're getting, you know, Chad says as though for some reason you either have an easy sense of humor or you're actually getting our sense of humor if it's different,
no,
but you
I'm
start laughing.
I'm getting it.
You know, Chad says we got you know, wooden telephone poles. You laughed at that. So anyways, that's you're reminding me. It was really fun listening to it again. And yeah, I don't know what other people think of it. I don't know how different people's senses of humor
are. Right. That's something to talk about after these topics wrap, because, you know, what does it mean to sense a sort of understanding in somebody when there's no real matching?
Okay, let's hold that. What was Chad saying? You were saying,
Chad, you're on the roll.
I was just listening. I haven't said anything for a minute.
Well, that's what we're trying to get back to 2 minutes ago, before we get distracted by the phone. What were you saying? I was asking you what you thought of it, of me talking to Zappa or something, and you were saying...
I had, at that time, I had no experience with psychics or no idea how that all works or anything. So I just had the image of seances, that you were going somewhere and sitting around with a bunch of candles and, like, doing a Houdini-style seance.
Okay, so then have you ever heard, remember when McClellan came on Cashflow once or twice, what did you think of that back in 2010 or 11? No seance. And
you mean
we did
through
it on
Ion?
Yeah, through Ion.
I've never been against the idea at all. Like, it's just, I'm as open-minded about that as I am about...
So you've changed your image of it.
Out of trees here.
You've changed your image of it. You don't have the seance idea. You know that we can do it right there on the phone with Ion, as we did in McLuhan and Maui series.
And that there's nothing weird about it. Like, JW doesn't lay down on a bed with a bunch of robes or anything like that.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, when the first times I was doing it in 2009, I said, this is a fucking fake job. This is too easy. I didn't like the way JW was making it. It seemed like JW was doing it. Mm-hmm. You remember that, Carol?
Yeah, but he was also going around making Jell-O while he was doing it.
Yeah, no, wait, go ahead, Carol.
And we'd say, welcome, Ion, and then there'd be... which seems so fake. He just blew into the microphone.
Like letting air out of a tire. Letting air out of a tire.
Like a genie.
And lately he's gotten much more lackadaisical. It's like...
He's got... Yeah, Jada has always been an original person.
So he came up.
Okay, I have to fool Bob. He blew into the microphone.
I was listening to one of my sessions from 2011 when Ion had started to get lazy with the whole blowing in thing. And Bob's just like, you know, it's July 29th, 2010, copyright New Grandview Incorporated. Here we are with Chad. Greetings, Ion. Then Ion just goes, hey.
So you'd be off for a minute or so. You say, oh, fuck, this is a fake. And then I would start talking beyond human level of talking. Then you'd be back into, okay, I'm respecting this voice again.
Wow. And I think the fact that it's an audio environment changes the need for a visual of it. When people first come on, when I first started engaging and it was like exposing myself to what a channel was or all these things, I would like want to watch YouTubes of people channeling. Like, I would kind of want some sort of visual to get a sense.
And that's the thing, though. Ion lays out such dense imagery orally.
Exactly.
Like on rewrite. Yeah, so remember, Bob, all the imagery that Ion would lay out and rewrite and all the imagery in my triangulation sessions? Like, it is so dense, and your mind just typically wouldn't get that much information.
I'm asking, I don't get what Alyssa's saying. You would go looking up videos of channelers to get an idea of what you just experienced, or you wanted YouTubes.
No, before I was when I was just starting to sort of open my understanding of what a channel was, you know, because I didn't have, you guys are talking about
this is before Ion. This is before
exactly.
Ion.
Yeah, exactly. And
what did you do?
And it was, well, I'm just noticing that there was a need for some sort of visual.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And I'm contrasting, you know, like hearing somebody describe, like Chad, you were saying, like there's a body on the floor, you know, or there's some, you know, what's going on in the room as this is happening. There's some sort of like need to physically imagine yourself visually, you know,
yes.
being absorbed.
Well, it's like when Ion goes, Ion will say like, it's like a flying genie, or it's like you take a pencil, you put on a hula hoop, and you run it along the wall, and then Bob's going, wait, what the fuck are you talking about? What do you mean put a pen on a hula hoop and put it on the wall? I can't imagine that. Ion, Chad, what the fuck is he talking about?
So
we demand visualization. You're saying now you don't care about that.
Exactly. I'm noticing the progression of when I first started, and then as I exposed myself to more and more audio of Ion, then it started to change my expectations, and there was a duration of information and noticing those patterns, and where you start to, you know, you start to understand your own judgments. And then you can then start looking at your own judgments in a new way as well.
It's not only that, but here, I think Ion is forcing, by being only acoustic, they're forcing you, if you're going to engage, you've got to develop the imagery yourself. You have to develop.
Right. That's a cool angle on it.
But I find the image is irrelevant. I can't follow imagery anyways. I got low visualization abilities. I think that's why I can't fix a car. I can't visualize the mechanic part. So what touches what? And I found that I am better. I am more in tune to the 21st century because the kneecap making the ankle move, mechanical connecting kinetic machinery is not here anymore.
It's over. Yeah, exactly.
It's over.
Yeah.
And my kind of, well, you don't have to fucking know anything. It's just there for you. That's what I'm an avant-garde. I'm the leading edge of that sensibility. The better you don't know anything, you can handle this new world we're in with Ion.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, even Mark Andreessen, the guy who is one of the venture capitalists in Silicon Valley. Yeah. He wrote an essay called Software is Eating the World. And obviously, he's generations behind where you are, but still.
Right.
They're acknowledging now that everything is being turned into software and that hardware is becoming irrelevant.
And they can't visualize what software is.
Right.
What is it? Let me give you an example. When I was with Walter Bord and his Indian girlfriend, Native American girlfriend, Jennifer, remember her, Carol, Jacqueline, or Jennifer, we had to stop at a gas station.
Jeanette,
and I think she was driving, and Walter and I were in the back, and so she wanted to get some gas, so we stopped. And then all of a sudden she had to go to the bathroom. She said, Bob, fill up the tank for me. I go, what? What do you do? And she said, well, what? You don't know how? I said, I've never fucking touched a tank thing. I don't know how to do it. What do you do? And she puts the fucking thing in my hand, you know, the hose. I said, fuck that. It's all greasy. So I gave it back to her. And she never got over it. I couldn't even fucking stick the thing into the car. Even Bart was freaked out. But I loved doing that effect. But it was genuine. I had never done it. I didn't know how to do it. And I wasn't going to do it, you know, because I never had a car. But she was fucking shocked. It's like I had shot myself right in front of her for no reason. You know?
No, you shot her.
Yes. And I'm saying, I am glad I didn't know that shit. It's all gone now anyways. I don't need to fill up my car or anything. So I have an alibi for the way I was. I was living it ahead of myself. I was living waiting for the 21st century to catch up to me. And, software's eating the world. No, Ion's eating the world, Mr. Andreessen. And he can't go that far. Yeah, it's like that software's eating the world. Fuck that shit. That's why I wish these guys had enough adventurousness to come over here, Mr. Andreessen, and then I kibitz with him and Ion does and see if he can take it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That'd be so fascinating.
Yeah, but that would ruin his career because people that entrust
their finances.
Well,
he's a billionaire. See, what is he holding together?
Yeah,
he's a billionaire. He doesn't fucking need anything. What is he?
He doesn't realize that because he doesn't.
With?
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't realize that once you get to whatever it is, 100 million, you don't even need to count anymore.
Yeah, 100 billion. You got a billion, you're a trillionaire whether you got it or not, because it could happen any day if the market goes up or down or something. It's true. I'll bring Sean in. Not that we want Sean. Sean usually tries to give a kid's report, but we're having a good conversation, so we don't want any report right now, Sean. If we run out in 5-7 minutes, yeah, you can get report. keep bringing your kid report to the table. But we're having a good conversation here, and it's wide open. Who's 973? Is that Yuri? Is 973 Yuri, or is that another guy, Michael, or somebody, or Kent, Kevin? Anyways, why don't we have a roll call, please? Of course, never mind. You won't even say who you are. See, it's so ridiculous. Yeah, it's what Nelson Tall used to say at CKLN. Bob's show is so dangerous, people change their names before they'll fucking listen. They change their name just for the act of listening.
Yeah. I remember even I'm five-bodied.
Oh, listen, guys. Oh, no, I can't talk about it. I guess you're right. Anyways.
I can't talk about it.
Yes.
Tell us. You got to tell us now.
No, I blew it. But
okay.
I'll tell you something else. I'll tell you something else that no, I can't tell it. I'm not allowed to.
I hate it. Stop,
yeah.
Bob.
It's good. It's, no, I can't say anything. Oh, sorry, I can't say anything about it.
All right, Bob. You're not allowed to talk now. Someone else has to talk.
What was the last line? So that you could talk?
Someone else has to talk.
Someone else has to talk. It doesn't keep reneging on their promise to offer some great insight.
Okay, here, Chad, you were talking about, you know, ion limits in audio.
I was talking about anonymity. Hold on, though. I was talking about anonymity.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was really bad back in the five-bodied days, Bob. Like, when I would talk to some of the people offline, like, off of board, like, whether it was Key or whether it was Andrew, like, especially Andrew, he was so paranoid that someone would find out he's participating on your forum.
Hey, by the way, Andrew Roberts liked something in our world somewhere. So I don't know if it was the McLuhan thing or something. I think it might have been the McLuhan forum. Andrew Roberts showed up, and he liked something. His name showed up.
Wow.
I haven't seen his name in like 4 or 5 years. But okay, go ahead. You were saying that people were, embarrassed to be even associated with me. They wouldn't admit they go to Five Bodies.
Oh, yeah. The other one was like Joan, because she had some job in publishing, and Andrew. Yeah. They're just really worried that some agency or somebody in their personal life would find out they're engaging in that kind of thing.
Well, they partly were right, because according to Ion, I'm a dangerous fucking person causing all kinds of disasters every day. You know what happens? Every time Karen and I go on the plane, there's a plane crash a few days before. And it's like, well, Bob and Karen should be killed, but we're not going to kill them. But someone's got to go, and it happened a couple weeks ago. Right, Karen? Where did we go? How did that... Oh, yeah, we flew to fucking Honolulu, a 20-minute flight, and there was a fucking airplane crash the day before. It's like, it's pretty interesting that it happens every time. We know when we're going to get ready. We wait to see where the plane crash is going to be. You know, serious dead people will happen within, a day or two before we fly. It's an ecology. So if you know we're flying somewhere, don't get on a plane. Cancel your trip.
You're clear.
Yeah, until we've had our trip. But it was ridiculous. A 20-minute flight, they still had to sacrifice somebody. So that's a danger. Go ahead.
So you're saying the flight, a similar flight, like a short flight crash?
No, major disaster. I think it was a disappearance in India or something. Malaysia, it was a serious big chunk of people gone.
Got it. So you're talking about anonymity, Chad. Are you finished with that?
Yeah.
Okay, so getting to this limiting of the audio that you were mentioning and how you were talking about it, just, then we have to visualize it. And then, Bob, you were like, no, it's not even about the visual. You can't even visualize software or ion swallowing everything. And when there's something about this this building up of all the senses and yet losing all the senses. That's kind of happening,
right,
like simultaneously.
Hey, now, Lisa. You may not have heard me talk earlier, but it's exactly what Cameron McEwen is saying in the McLuhan blog, his McLuhan blog. We numb ourselves. It's always both. We numb ourselves and enhance ourselves at the same time. And he says if you don't include the opposite in your statement, you're not making a clear statement. So that's something I've read enough of him to see that's one of his main points. And McLuhan is including both in every line he writes.
Wow, yeah. But it's just like there's such a sense of proprioception in you when you're hearing something and you're like slightly visualizing it, but not necessarily in like an eye dominant way. And,
right,
you know, all these other sort of senses, and that's kind of what I'm picking up of what you were saying, Chad, is like there's something about the frequency of these audios that it's an ear level frequency, but there's so many other frequencies that are happening on the spectrum and they're hitting or brushing us or whatever, and it's the learn. It's like the gathering of all those perceptions so that you're, I don't know, you can't really say that you're living from a wider place because that's still like a spatial sort of context to it, but it's just kind of fun to play around with that perception of what's happening here, because it isn't visual like you were saying, Bob, but yet it is, also, in a way, like what you're
saying. Yeah, all the senses are involved. It's just the eye is not dominant. I see the word mind as more of a visual thing. When people say, I can't follow you, this or that, they want to visualize. And so largely their mind is a visualizing action.
Did someone say the
now,
mind
you guys are musicians.
Earlier?
Now, what is that? Now, you guys are musicians, so you're not visualizing when you're creating order out of sound, right? You're not visualizing. I don't know what you're doing. You're hearing?
I do have a sense of I'm sculpting with sound, but it's not like from a visual place like when I'm painting something. That's totally different. But yeah, Chad, what would you say?
With regard to
when you're playing music, is there a visualizing, the mind as visualizer, is that involved with the mind of music? Or is it a non-visual mind?
You know why? Like, I don't think I did the musician thing the way other people ever did.
Yeah.
The whole time I was making music, I just thought, am I doing this right? Is this how they're supposed to do it? It's like the first few times I smoked marijuana, I was like, am I supposed to feel this way? I'm not getting anything. It's not doing anything to me. You know, so anyway, all I thought, that's what was going through my head creating music, is always constantly like, am I doing this right? Is this how it's supposed to feel?
But you did play an instrument when you performed live, right?
Yeah, but that's what my thought process was while I was playing an instrument.
Wait, you never pushed past that?
Not really. It was always like, is this music? Is this music? Is this what music is supposed to be? Is this the thing that I'm...
Were you saying, how come I don't feel anything, like on the marijuana?
Yeah.
When you're doing
how come I'm not feeling anything? And then you look at videos of me while I'm playing, and I'm not, like, most of the musicians are, like, expressing shit with their face and everything. They're, like, getting in the groove. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm, like, reading a tax return.
And what instrument are you playing?
The guitar.
Oh, okay. So you can play the guitar. So, well, what does that mean? That means that you didn't understand music in some way.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, here's a thought, because, you know, I've played the same music night after night for, you know, 30-some nights. So it's really...
Which, to me, Alyssa, is horrible. To play the same shit. How do you guys do that?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. The point I'm making is, I've played music a lot, and it's not necessarily about even playing the same thing every night. It's just like exposing myself to that environment quite frequently, and I noticed that my own emotional engagement or some sort of even non-emotional, non-mind engagement to the music changes. Like, it's continually ebbing and flowing, like, how much I'm resonating with what I'm making or not. And that's something that is, like, you know, could be uncomfortable.
Isn't that like sex? Isn't that like sex?
Right.
Some fucks are good, some fucks are boring. Right?
Right. I mean, yeah, I think it's just like this interesting way of understanding that there can't be this always one way, like we're
right.
talking about with the both ands. And becoming
now, that's a good.
Hey,
listen, we're coming to the end of the show, but stay on the line after. But the record probably in. That seems to be the deepest, most basic wisdom. The ebb and flow, which is what Ayn came forth and said in a new way. The contrast you create with contrast. That is what you get used to in Ayn-dom. And you're now noticing, you're accepting the ebb and flow of your music enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it goes way beyond that, like even just with life, like, and time. I mean, that could be a veil. That could be another way of looking at what a veil could be.
Yes, the ebb and flow is the final delusion of the unascended. But it's the basic thing of the little man's life. I mean, it's all wisdom goes around that. If you're having a bad time, you'll know that it will go away, and some unforeseen better thing will show up if you just are patient with it. Because it can't stay one way all the time. So if you're having a great time, you know that's going to become a bad time.
Yeah, but I think what happens, what I see medically, is people will get into the contrast and the bad way, but then it'll turn biochemical on them. It'll turn into it affecting their chemistry so badly that they stay stuck in the bad thing because they're magnesium deficient, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this is where Ayn comes along. We come along and make these products to get you out of your bad biochemistry.
If you think of the physical as something beyond you, and you've got the non-physical and the labyrinth of the mind, the interplay of those three, maybe what you're doing is activating the non-physical because they get stuck in the physical and their mind version. Let's continue this once the music's over.
Nice.
Break through there. Dr. D. Non-stop. Brilliant. I did it again. Last second.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. But half of it was blipped out
probably.
Half of it was probably blipped out.
Thanks for all the pitch.
That's boring. I never used that phrase.